Welcome to the Dog Classroom,
the Dog Classroom podcast. I am your co-host, Anne Marie.
And I'm your co-host, Amelia.
Like and subscribe
on Spotify and YouTube in video format. And now into the episode.
So our topic for this week is how to pick a dog trainer. And there's a lot to get into, so we'll jump into it. But there's sort of some pillars that we are going with.
Pillars. Okay.
So in this blog that I mentioned, I had done a blog series on our website called Finding the Right Dog Trainer. And I used some of these pillars. So there was finding an educated dog trainer.
Okay.
There was finding an experienced dog trainer.
Okay.
And there was finding an ethical dog trainer.
Okay, so we have the three E's.
So we have the three E's, but then I also want to talk about skill.
Okay.
Because skill is important. So jumping all the way back to the beginning.
To the beginning of education.
Why don't you talk to us about finding an educated dog trainer?
Finding an educated dog trainer.
What do people look for? How do they know?
Okay. I think I want people to know that the majority of dog trainers have education, or
they do.
Okay. Yes. Or there's also different venues on the way to educate yourself as a dog trainer, because anybody can be a dog trainer, which is tricky. And this is why we're doing this. We're just going to try to encourage people. If you're looking for a general trainer as far as obedience, if you're looking for more specifics with behavior issues or anything like that, is we're here today just doing this to throw information out there, the pillars, and to educate you guys, because we've worked, the two of us as well as staff, has worked extremely hard at having those answers and having those tools to teach people how to cohabitate with these awesome animals. So when we talk about education, there isn't, say, a university or college program.
Correct.
Okay, so I did go to college for veterinary technician.
You went to university.
I did, and I got a Bachelor of Science, but I don't know really how that plays in, but
we're educated. I also have an honors degree.
We do.
And I also went to college as well.
We did. Yeah. So the thing is, there isn't, say, a course out there that you can become a certified dog trainer, like, say, a college or university courses.
Yeah.
I know there are some courses out there online that private organizations or private training facilities have launched.
Yes.
And a lot of it is online.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you don't necessarily go there, you do online. But in reminding you guys is, unfortunately, anybody can offer that.
Yes.
So before you make the commitment or pay the tuition fee, ask questions.
Yes, because I have seen a ton of programs that are very expensive, and I have asked questions, and the answers that I've received are, you know, either very cagey, we won't tell you that information, as far as, like, where did you, you know, who's teaching this? What are their qualifications? If you have a professor in university, you know their qualifications to be there, right?
Yeah.
You know that they know what they're talking about. But at some of these private places, it's just Joe from down the street has decided to open up this online college or whatever they want to call it, and they claim that you're going to be certified by the end of it. And so I think a lot of that is asking those questions and making sure that you're getting information from qualified individuals.
Yeah, for sure. And then, but there are programs out there, like Karen Pryor offers a training program online, Jean Donaldson does. So there are programs out there that I would say are worth it.
Yeah.
You know, as far as the cost and the time. So those of us that have looked into accreditation programs or different education. So let's just comment a little bit how we got our education to sort of set the precedent. So I would say where I started was I mentored another technician that taught puppy school.
Mm-hmm. And we did talk about this back in our intro episode of our podcast.
We did. So I won't go too technical, but I had that mentor, and then looking for those resources online, mm-hmm. right, was a major thing. Anytime I look up a person, I look to see their philosophy. I look to see references, what type of education.
Those are the pillars.
The pillars.
Just the rephrased. Pillars.
Yeah. So, and then I'll like say, read the information.
Yeah.
Right. But there's just so much media out there now. And this is why another reason we honestly started podcasts.
Yeah.
Because we're trying to get out there. I don't want to say the educated point of view, but just people to understand that there's a little bit more than just advertising online that you can have a dog sitter down. Yeah. Like there's just way more to understanding this amazing species, right? Because yeah. we have vets that go to school specifically for dog training.
Yeah. Well, or, sorry, for behavior.
Yeah. Specifically for,
but
you know,
we
dogs.
Also talked about back in episode, season one, episode three, how dogs learn, yeah. right? There is an entire science there.
Yeah.
And you can't simply deny that that exists, right? So if you get an educated dog trainer, they know about that.
Yeah.
And they know how to apply that. So in talking about the education, I think the important thing to note is that it is unregulated.
Yeah.
So, like we talked about in a previous episode, like you can't be a plumber, electrician, you can't be a nurse without passing some licensing exams. But to be a dog trainer, you just have to just put up a flyer and say, here, I'll take on your aggressive dog.
Right. And I think the other thing, right, it is a challenge. But like you said, there's those different companies out there and you can become registered. But look at what registered means. Mm-hmm. So we both are registered.
Certified
for what we call CPDT. So
the Certification Council for Professional Dog Trainers.
There we go.
Website being pulled up there. And that's voluntary. So we yeah. do that just because we want to further the profession. We want it to be taken more seriously. And this is an independent organization. So you don't take a course from CCPDT and then you're certified by them. You learn on your own. You go to a different course, whatever. And then you sit down and you write that test. And then I actually took it a step further and I went for the KSA, which is the knowledge and skills assessed. So in that, I actually had to submit videos. I had to, you know, do different scenarios to prove that I could train certain skills and have, you know, a panel judging right. on that.
Yeah.
So that's all voluntary, but I think it's important that we try as trainers to improve the profession that way and yeah. to try to raise the standard and go, okay, you know, the kid at the pet store or whoever, the breeder, whoever's giving the information, they are not a dog trainer. A dog trainer should be somebody who has proven that they understand. So in finding the educated dog trainer, you want to look for somebody who has continuing education.
Right. So I just want to do one little comment as to why we picked the CPDT.
Okay.
Okay. Reason why is it was the largest organization in North America.
Yes.
Yeah. So it was, and that's why we chose to do our accreditation through there. And I would say has the most members and educators that we relate to.
I think that for me, it was also because, again, you want to look at like, who are these people? What do they know? What are,
yep.
Who are they to certify other people? Right. If you wanted to be a nurse, you're going to look for a test that's being written by somebody who knows about what nurses do. Right. You're not going to look for somebody that's come off the street and said, here's an exam. You know, I want to know that the people writing the exam actually know what they're talking about and that the people who are certifying sort of have the right information, because you yeah. could totally write any test that you find on the internet. And, you know, they're telling you, yeah, you aced it. Good for you. But the information isn't
yeah.
valid.
So where do you go exactly with it?
So I liked yeah. that about the CCPDT, and I liked that it was independent And I liked that there was an ethics statement and there's certain requirements. So we have to have certain education.
Yeah.
Which means that we can't just say, okay, I took a course in 1980 and here I go. I'm not going to update my education at all. And we also have the ethics agreement where, you know, we will treat clients a certain way. We will treat dogs a certain way. And then also we have record keeping. So there's actually some standards there, which I think is really important, where a lot of professions need that. But for dog trainers, it's just, you know, nobody really thinks about that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And the other thing, again, bringing it up, and I'm also, you know, looking at also write articles for the newspaper, showing people that there are sort of the different levels. And sorry, what I'm getting at is Thunder Bay to me is quite word of mouth.
Yes.
As far as advertising and getting different things out there. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, because I found in the beginning when I started, I did all this advertising and everything. And honestly, now it's like word of mouth, but then that's where social media and all our Spotify and all that come into play. But so even though you get a recommendation, even I get recommendations, you know, for different, like, I don't want to say compare it to a hairdresser or dentist, that sort of thing. I still look into it is basically what I'm saying. I don't necessarily just take it for face value because I just think there's other things there. But now to move on a little bit, since we talked about the education component, what about experience? The thing that gets me with the experience is I usually say to my clients, what makes a good dog trainer is the fact that you can adjust a certain exercise or behavior not only one way.
Right.
So if you have somebody telling you that it has to be done that way, mm-hmm. that's concerning.
Yeah.
Because all dogs learn differently. All people learn differently. And there's never just one way of doing things. So
but that doesn't open you up to, you know, ridiculous ways of doing things, which I think is something else to look at. Because when you're saying that, I know what you're talking about. I know you're talking about there's luring, there's shaping, there's, you know, there's different ways to get a behavior. There's looking at, you know, the whole situation. You could also, like, let's say we're talking about a sit. You can lure a sit. You can shape a sit. You could also push the dog's butt onto the floor. That doesn't mean that that's the right way to do it. And I think that for a lot of people, it's like, if all you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail, right? It's that
look at
saying.
You with the scenario.
I like the scenario because I think that's what you're sort of getting at is they only have a hammer and that's all they know how to do.
Yeah.
Is to hit the nail.
Yeah. So, with education of working with dogs, we have a toolbox.
Yes.
There we go. I'm going to go with your analogy.
Yeah.
Okay. With your hammer. In that toolbox, we have multiple tools.
Yes.
That we can use to help you. And that comes with experience.
It does. And that's why the mentorship aspect, I think, was really important for me.
Yeah. I didn't necessarily have that because when I started, I was offering something that was not offered in Thunder Bay, which was, you know, the positive reinforcement training was using more treat training, and letting dogs offer behaviors. So I really had to look for those different courses and those different speakers and those different seminars to get that education and add to my toolbox.
Yeah.
Right. So before COVID, we went to a lot of seminars. I tried to at least go once a year, and anybody living in Thunder Bay knows that that can be a bit of an added cost because we seem to be over here and have to go through Toronto or Minneapolis. But I made the effort because I wanted to be around people that I could learn from, but also people that got me excited about things and could relate.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
You want to find your people.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's how I felt when I found you, right? Is that I was like, oh, like this really resonates with me and this is working. And having the mentorship part of it helped me get experience the right way. Because yeah. I could have gone, okay, I took your class, I like you, I'm going to go and start my own business and, you know, do things maybe, you know, if you're practicing anything, so you're practicing piano and you can do it for 10,000 hours, but if you do it for 10,000 hours the wrong way or poorly, you're still not good at piano, right? So I had you to sort of be my teacher and be my mentor in that aspect to help me to do things the right way. And that's sort of where I wanted to tie in skill, maybe to go out of order a little bit of my yeah. pillars.
But I think watching, right?
Yes.
So that being the mentorship is not just learning or reading something online. It's actually being in it and a part of it.
Yeah.
And seeing things and then understanding what's happening and what the outcome is.
Yeah, and my observational skills have definitely gotten better over the years. And I think that's one thing that I've heard from a few people is like, wow, I can't believe you noticed that about certain things, because yeah. I've seen things firsthand so many times. And now it's just like the second language, right? And you're sort of picking things up really quickly because we've seen it and we've been involved and we sort of have that in-depth experience.
I think, again, observation, yes, is very important because it's allowing things to unfold and learn from them.
Mm-hmm.
But it also is us learning what we do and how it influences the dog or the owner.
Yeah, and I think, so on our website, we have the staff page, right?
Yeah.
And so all of our staff have mentored either with you or with me or with trainer Mike, who is one of our excellent trainers as well. And I think that part of learning to be a dog trainer is also the human aspect of it, right? It's not just learning about.
Yeah. Honestly, like when we talk about like new staff and training,
mm-hmm.
learning the training part is easy.
Yeah. Anyone right? can learn the curriculum.
And anyone can learn that part. It's relating it and explaining it to the client, to the person,
mm-hmm.
you know, because people will come into class and they'll joke a little bit and they're like, oh, you're training us and not the dog. Yeah.
We are. Yeah.
Because we don't live with the dog.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We don't. So we're trying to teach them the skills to then transfer. So when we understand how dogs learn, we're teaching that to you so you will have success.
Yeah.
Then at home. So honestly, it's just about that time management. It's about teaching a behavior. It's about demoing a behavior. Yeah. It's about getting a behavior. Yeah. Yeah.
So there's lots of aspects for experience. And then there's also different areas of experience, right? Which we sort of have talked about before. But, you know, just because someone can get their dog to do agility obstacles and they figured out a way that works for their dog does not mean that they can then go and do a behavior consult for separation anxiety.
Yeah. So let's look at different types then of the education part. So I've always said that actually we're going to go into skill here for a second. Okay. So I think it's like, I'm going to swish it in there. Yeah. Just, it's going to go in, is not only are we're learning how to execute.
I don't like that word.
Okay. We're learning how to execute a behavior. Right? So you have different trainers that teach different things, and it's almost like a specialty.
Yes.
Right?
Okay.
So I would say both of our skill set is quite broad.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And we actually talked about when it comes to behavior consults, we now have sort of separated a little yes. bit. So we have the opportunity to become a little bit more specialized instead of five things, two things.
Yeah.
right?
Right.
Because I think the more you spend time watching those things and being a part of them, you learn. And that's why I tell people, anytime I'm doing a behavior consult or a training session, I am so learning. Mm-hmm. Every single dog teaches me, right? Yeah. And it's to be open to actually picking up on those little triggers and being thankful that they're there. But that's where the skill part comes into play, where if you focus on a certain, I don't want to say type of training, because, you know, we could bring up agility. If only I all did was just train agility, right? Mm-hmm. And did agility, I'm going to be around it more. I'm going to experience more. I'm going to see more. I would take more courses to fine tune it. So, you know, as a business owner and trainer, I understand, and I don't think I can be excellent at everything.
Right.
And I'm okay with that because I want to learn from others that have, you know, maybe more experience and yeah. have done different levels of agility and at different venues,
right?
You know, around the country and that sort of thing. And I'm totally good with that. So I think as trainers, we also need to learn that we don't necessarily, and this was hard for me at the beginning because I found I was just on my own a little bit, but I felt like everybody needed me to know every little thing yeah. about it. And it became actually, you know, quite stressful. But now in having the staff that I have, and in having even the clients that we have, who a lot of them have become friends.
Yes.
Yeah. In having those conversations can be had. And then, especially with even you and Kelsey, like service dog stuff. I'm like, you know what? These are the experts here. Talk to these ladies because you've done the research, you keep up on it. Where I know I've done a lot more with reactive classes yeah. because I was in the beginning, I built it. I see the dogs on a regular basis. I'm watching the cues. Mm-hmm. So I'm very aware of what's happening. So I think it's knowing, you know, when to refer out
yeah.
or when to say, okay, I think that's a little bit out of my league. And they were actually talking about that at the aggressive dog conference. And they were just, you know, saying, know your limits, and could somebody else say help a little bit better, or what could you learn? Mm-hmm. So the thing sometimes is, you know, Kelsey, even you sometimes, not so much, you're getting there, but some of the younger trainers will say, you know, I had this dog in the class. Oh, you're going to do a consult. Can I come?
Okay.
Yeah. Can I come and just watch?
Yeah.
Because then they're actually seeing it unfold and work from there. And isn't that learning?
Yeah. And I think too, like what you said about referring out is, even now I'll still do that. If I have a client or I do a consult and I go, you know what, let me get back to you on that. I'm going to chat with Anne-Marie. And we have each other, and we sort of have, like you said, like we have the other instructors, like we all have a different sort of specialty that we can sort of refer to each other. And if we don't know, we have other contacts, right? We have, you know, yeah. maybe we ask Amanda, maybe we, you know, we go yeah. out of sort of our little circle so that we can make sure that we're giving the clients the best possible service. And we're not assuming that we know everything, and we're not putting our ego sort of above everything else,
yeah.
which sort of comes into the ethics thing. So with the ethics pillar, I did write this in my little blog about it, but basically you want to find someone that matches your ethics, right? Like as far as what you're willing to do or what approach you want to take to training, but also someone that's willing to say, I don't know, I'm going to refer out. I think it's unethical to say, yeah, I know all about that. Let me take your money and then guess.
Yeah.
Whereas I think for us, the ethics piece also comes down to like, If we don't know something, we're going to find somebody who does. And I know that's part of in our certification there's a concept, it's called least intrusive, minimally aversive, as far as what you can use, LIMA, L-I-M-A, as far as what techniques you can use. So for example, we're required to start with positive reinforcement. And when you get to a point where you say, I don't know how to deal with this with positive reinforcement, you need to refer out.
Yeah.
Because there's somebody who does. And that doesn't excuse you, you know, using a method that could do more harm than good.
Yeah.
So I think with the ethics piece, there's a lot of different aspects to it.
Yeah. Like, again, this could be a total different topic where I think different trainers as well as different people have different ethics. But the thing to remember is these are, and I'm not comparing dogs to people, but this is a species that evolved with us.
Yeah, to live with us.
To live with us. And, you know, through socialization and desensitization too, mm-hmm. when you look at the different levels is, and if we choose to cohabitate, there has to be a respect level.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so just on my final pillar that I know we've sort of weaved in and out is the skill, is there are certain things that take different kinds of skills, right? So let's say you're working with a reactive dog, just because that's what you do a lot.
Okay.
And you want to mark, you know, a certain behavior. You need to have the observation skills, and you need to have the timing skills, and yes. you need to have the skills to mark and to reward and all of those things. So there are skills that we have as trainers that maybe we could get dogs to do something really well that we are trying to then teach to our clients as well.
Yeah.
So if we don't have those skills, we can't then teach them to people. So I think having the skill that you're looking for is also important when you're picking a trainer.
Yeah.
Like if I wanted, just going back to agility, because I do agility, but if I wanted somebody who, you know, had a ton of agility skills, I would look for somebody who's done agility, right?
Yeah, who's actually like trialed and been out there,
yeah,
done that.
So why don't you then summarize, and we're just going to kind of wrap up how to pick a trainer.
Okay, so the main topics we're looking at, and what I can't stress enough, is have a conversation.
Yep.
Right? Okay, so we know Thunder Bay is word of mouth. Yes. But do a little bit of research.
Yeah. Watch a class.
Watch a class. Ask for references. Right? Mm-hmm. We were talking about this before. Watch a class. Ask for references. Ask to watch a consult. Ask their philosophy. Again, I can't say enough about asking questions. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. What I want to say about education is, yes, trainers should be educated. And I'm just going to put that out there and leave it, because we did describe in detail the different types of education that yep. you can get. Though just to throw in there real quick is there is an organization that is trying to have dog training regulated.
Yes, that's actually yeah. the CCPDT and yeah. APDT, which is the Association of Professional Dog Trainers.
Yeah, so together. They are working. They've created a council because of, again, different types of training. Experience is huge.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You know, it's nice to be around dogs, grow up around dogs. But to me, when you're going to look at, you know, different types of people and different breeds, ages, sizes of dogs, you need a little bit more than just, you know, owning a few yeah. dogs yourself. Or
and everybody starts somewhere, but having a mentor for that experience yeah. is invaluable.
Yeah. So that might be, you know, like me, I started working at a vet clinic. It was my thing. Did I plan on becoming a dog trainer? No. Did I just sort of seem to travel that road? But what it did is everything built on everything.
Yeah.
So having the ethics, or a trainer that has the same ethics as you that you're comfortable with.
Yeah.
I also feel that if the trainer doesn't want you there, little bit concerned, because you need to be a part of the training because that animal cohabitates with you.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So you're talking like board and train sort of things.
Yeah. And again, we'll, you know, get into that a little bit.
I do want to talk about board and train on a different episode.
But. Yeah. But we'll definitely be going there. But be a part of it. Like, to me, that's the best thing about owning a dog. Yeah. But again, I am a little bit of a training junkie. Right. So we know that.
We do.
And skill. You know, that comes with time. comes with time and experience.
Yeah.
And, you know, we can look and we joke a little bit, like some of our clients have, and I think, and we're going to get into more like videotaping, but, you know, after they've taken a few sets of classes, the skills are amazing.
Yeah.
You know, so it's the right teacher and it's the right information and it's building. Like when you come through our door in puppy school, you know, we're not going to rate you on, you know, delivering a treat, dropping this and that. But what it is it's building on it and it's giving you successes.
Awesome. So we'll wrap that up for this episode and make sure you like and subscribe. Make sure you're following us on social media and make sure you rate us 5 stars on your favorite podcast app.
Thank you.